The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You were supposed to be here 1 week, maybe two. It's been 4 months, Key. If Scarlett finds out you were passed out in front of the kids, we'll both be dead. Or worse, it'll be a conversation.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 18 for the week of January 27th, 2014. I am Garden Variety Ho David T. Cole, and I'm here with Prune Say Defendant Sarah D. Bunting.
Permission to treat the witness as hostile.
Watering contempt of court, Tar Ariano.
Just a sprinkle of insubordination.
And disheveled Southern lawyer, Adam Sternberg.
I do declare.
Welcome.
Hello.
First, let us welcome in for the first time in the new era, Adam Sternberg.
Adam.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
Recent new father.
Yes. Recent new, correct. Newly author. Published novelist, yeah. Of Shovel
also
Ready.
Correct.
Welcome.
And Olympian. Not really.
I was like, there's a lot I don't know about Adam. I remember when I discovered he was secretly American. That was very shocking.
Mm-hmm. And an archer, apparently.
And we are here to talk about two big premieres that happened last week of shows we may or may not continue to watch. Let's start with the one that inspired our opening sound clip and naming convention for our intros, Rake on
yes.
Fox.
Starring Greg Kinnear as Rake?
Yes. A lot of people I know, I don't know how the ad campaign has been in New York, but several people that I follow on Twitter in Los Angeles, where it's been postered and billboarded everywhere, are calling it Steak Face because yeah. There's a picture of him with a black eye and
right.
A steak on his face in the tradition of the Do No Harm ad campaign, also known as Dr. Face Hands.
Yes.
Is it also getting barraged in New York? I will ask our East Coast contributors.
There's a lot of Rake out there.
Yeah, it's really? A lot of side of the bus Rake, bus mm-hmm. stop Rake, cab top Rake. I don't think we're getting that much steak face, though. But I don't get out
I've
much.
Seen steak face.
You've seen steak
I've
face?
I've seen some steak face.
Right. Steak face sounds like a third-tier slasher movie protagonist.
The next season of American Horror Story is going to be about steak face. It takes place in a butcher shop.
Okay. I would actually be a little more likely to keep watching if it were called Steak Face.
Yeah.
Because it's like, let's see where this is going to go on a serial basis. But first of all, his name is not actually Rake,
no,
correct?
He is a Rake, I think is the
okay.
idea.
And really that...
And the show isn't set in the 40s.
No.
Interesting.
But his name should be Rake, 40s. Right? We're all behind that notion that if you...
Yes.
Like, it is against all laws of TV.
Right.
That this guy's character's name isn't Rake, even his middle name, just even a nickname.
Here's the problem. It's based on an Australian show. It's a remake of an Australian show that originally, I think it's still on, but it stars Richard Roxburgh, who's best known as the weaselly guy that they're trying to get money out of in Moulin Rouge. Maybe Rake
wow.
is more
oh, yeah,
of a more of a slang term in Australia than it is here, but I don't think that means anything to anyone. And why they would keep it,
really?
As opposed to calling it like heel or something, because it's sort of the same thing. You know what I mean? But
Scallywag.
Rake makes me think of like Clarissa. Blackguard. You know,
like no,
it's a very
yes.
old-fashioned-y term. To
maybe it's just because I'm Canadian and uh-huh. it's the whole British thing angle
right.
of it that I knew what it was.
I knew what it was,
but I read a ton of whatever Peter Wimsey novels as a kid.
Yeah,
okay. Still sure. bad naming.
But you know me, I'm not well read. I'm stupid, and I knew what it was.
Yeah. I will admit, when I saw the first Steakface ad in New York, I did think it was going to be some sort of Food Network show with Greg Kinnear as the host holding a... Because I have literally thought, not that distant past, sort of what is Greg Kinnear up to these days? Because I'm very fond of Greg Kinnear in general.
Yeah, I did know that.
He has an Academy Award nomination. Mm-hmm. He has an inspiring backstory.
Does he?
Well, he was on Talk Soup.
Oh, that's the inspiring backstory? Okay.
My bar for inspiration is very low. Okay. He overcame crippling disability of being on Talk Soup. You know, but he's one of those actors who kind of like flowered for a time into something slightly more interesting than what you thought he was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, but he was supposed to be much bigger than that, even. I thought he was supposed to be like, he was supposed to Clooney out and like just become too big a star for us to even look at directly. Mm-hmm. And then that never quite happened, which is fine. I don't, you know, think he's starving to death. But I don't, this was sort of pitched as maybe a comeback for him. And I'm like, well... choose again. Like, this is not...
Well, when I saw the poster, I thought, okay, so it's Greg Kinnear. He's in a show called Rake. I also assumed his name would be Rake, because obviously... Mm-hmm. But that's sort of his bread and butter, right? Is playing these kind of caddish but likable characters. I always think back to what I consider to be one of the classic Fame Tracker Two Stars, One Slot, which was Greg Kinnear versus Jay Moore.
Yes.
Who at the time were sort of similarly ascendant.
Isn't it crazy to think about
that
now?
Yeah, I guess they were.
I know.
I know. Somewhere, but, Jay Moore just said, bolt upright, and was like, someone remembers who I am. It's not because I called Alyssa Milano fat.
Exactly.
Fuckwad.
But so the concept of the show seemed, I was like, oh, this makes sense. Greg Kinnear on a network show about a kind of rakish guy. This could be good, but it's not actually good.
No.
After, I don't have much to say about it because it was very plain and not engaging.
It felt but forever
it,
long.
It did, but it felt to me like they brought David E. Kelly out of stasis after a decade and just said, just like make another one of your shows. And he, and that's exactly what it seems to me. And it seems out of time and out of place.
That's another guy that Greg Kinnear sort of occupies the same territory as, in my mind, is the guy from Ally McBeal whose name I will never remember.
Gil
but
Bellows?
He looks kind of like Greg Kinnear.
Not Gil Bellows.
Not Gil Bellows.
No, no. The other guy who was sort of like, he played a kind of slimy, womanizing lawyer. Greg German. Yes, I believe that's him.
Yeah, he was just on SVU last week.
He was.
Now he's sitting bolt upright like, hey.
He and Jay Moore are hanging out having lunch right now.
Probably.
Plotting their cross-country tour.
One lunch between them. All the wives are out making
more in German.
Ever, all
coming
of this
to your
is
county
more interesting
fair.
Than Ray,
did you bring the
way.
Coupons?
They're at Soup Plantation. They got one of those.
Oh, that's no. You just made it great. Soup Plantation is awesome. I love Soup Plantation. I feel sorry for anybody who can't go
anymore.
To Soup Plantation.
I thought it was really interesting, though, when I realized that the show was based on an Australian show, because I feel like this is a kind of show that they do really well in England and possibly really well in Australia, which they just don't ever do well in America. They never translate. Like that sitcom Men Behaving Badly that in the American version had Rob Schneider, I think, was in it maybe?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Like shows, because American TV just doesn't seem to be sort of as hospitable to... Like I feel like those rakish characters just get all the rakishness kind of wrung out of them by the time they get on screen, which is kind of what this show is. He's not rakish at all. The worst thing he does in the whole show is he wakes up with a hangover.
Well... Yeah. It's supposed to be, it was pitched as like a House lawyer, you know, so House is the last American character that sort of actually worked like that, I think.
But he was like a grumpy genius, right? He was like his show should have been called Crotchety.
Yeah.
Persnickety.
Well, and we're supposed to think he's the reason he gets that Rake gets away with stuff. I'll just call him Rake because who cares?
Yeah.
Finnegan Rake. That's his name in my mind.
calling John McClane Die Hard.
Yeah.
But we're supposed to think that he's a genius too because he noticed somebody spelling it should of instead of should have. Like the thing I said out loud to Dave while we were watching it was like, lots of people do that. That's not necessarily indicative of anything. I don't know why that's the thing that breaks the case open. Also, how did you even get uncorrected galleys of this guy's several years ago book? Like all of that was super sketchy to me. But
did you also notice one of the strangest things about that show is that that pilot was directed by Sam Raimi?
Yeah.
Was it?
Really?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Someone was calling in a favor or something. I'm so confused by that. Or John, or maybe his production company is doing
probably.
It, so he directed the pilot.
Yeah, but
I was actually thinking, like, if this were a movie, because it had this, like, well, not Get Shorty feel, but wanted to be Get Shorty feel,
Which
there's
definitely
worse things to want to be. And
for
it was
sure.
like, maybe if they had just boiled this whole concept down to 100 minutes, then you're done. Like, he has all these adventures, and it's sort of like, well, whatever, this is really pretentious, but like Shoot the Piano Player, that Truffaut movie where like you're in this one plot, and then there's a right turn, and then you're with these other people, and he's just like traveling throughout Paris, and he keeps jumping into other plots.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'll watch that. Mm-hmm. But every week, like, we have this character, and he's a lot better on premium cable. So,
yeah, to me, this is not nearly as good a reference as Truffaut, but it reminded me sort of Californication, but like a super neutered, watered down version. Mm-hmm. And Californication is, to me, like a really problematic, not enjoyable show. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like that, but he's not even as much of a jerk as David Duchovny is.
Right. Yeah.
He's like the network version of Californication. It just seems a little bit like, as much as Greg Kinnear, very charming, it doesn't seem to really work.
No.
Well, this is one of only four new shows that Fox premiered or bought, enlisted as the fifth that started mid-season. But this was one of the ones that was announced during the upfronts last year. And it was, at the time, much was made of the fact that Fox had bought three cop shows and a lawyer show, which are not exactly reinventing the wheel in terms of TV. But those, I would say, two are ones that people are excited about. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I think does something different or at least revives an old idea about how to do a cop sitcom. And Sarah's favorite, Sleepy Hollow, which...
I love that that's a cop show. I mean, it
well,
is.
It is, technically.
But it's like...
And then the other two
it's
are
like
almost...
saying The Old Man and the Sea is a story about a fish. Like,
right.
Yeah, kind of.
Yes, it's a cop
about
show a and a witch show.
$15,000 tuna.
And yeah. And then this one and Almost Human are sort of like such
Almost
total
human.
Shrug shows, you know?
Yeah.
Wait, that's
Almost,
still, is that still on?
Yes.
It's on. Still on.
First to watch it.
We will watch it tonight.
Oh.
It's not good, but I can't
it's
stop.
Not, it's
I don't
terrible,
understand
but
why.
It's so... It's fascinating and it's boring badness.
Like, I want to go to the hospital while I watch it and go in the MRI machine and just, like, take a look at what's happening to my brain when I'm watching this because
nothing.
I don't understand.
Which part of your brain is lighting up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Rake, will we continue? Oh, yeah, and the tuna. That was what I was most nervous about for this entire episode. Like, why aren't they paying more attention to the tuna? It can't be good. They're just pouring more ice on it. That's not going to work. The tuna!
Also, why didn't he? I mean, if we really want to get nitpicky about it,
yes,
he takes it to the sushi restaurant to sell it for $15,000, but then they're going to give him $25,000. But then they turn around and say they're only going to give him
$14,000 or $14,000
because he touched
Just take the $14,000 at that point.
Seriously,
it's only $1,000 less than you originally thought you were going to get, and it's a fish.
And you
thought, like,
guys-
LA smog is like silting down on it while you're arguing about this. Like, he touched it, but then it's allowed to sit in the corner of the office for however long. Whatever.
Yeah,
that was stressing me out too, Tara.
Thank you. I'm glad it wasn't just me. I mean, it's sort of a truism of TV writing that, like, there's nothing more boring to watch than money, and there isn't. And this is, like, they found a way to make it more boring, yet fascinating, which is turn the money into a giant fish he's got to drag everywhere. Anyway, speaking of the sea, let's move on to our next show.
Nice.
Black Sails on Stars. This is a channel I'm sure most of us don't get, but...
Has it aired for real?
Yeah, it aired on Saturday.
I'm going to do it anyway. It's just because it's apropos. Yarr! Spoilers ahoy! Fun ahoy, mateys!
It would have been a more fun show
spoilers,
if anyone
anyway.
Had danced a hornpipe on Black Sails. They did not.
No.
So even if you don't get stars, you might have seen this the premiere because they put it up on YouTube in a very... Baudelaireized, tit blurry version.
Yeah.
Oh god.
I watched the YouTube version, and I'm so weirdly curious now what that guy's face looks like at the end.
Oh yeah, I forgot to
beat
record
to death.
The actual face.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler.
So we could see
because they just that they digitize out his face for like the entire last section of the show, and there's quite a bit of blood before that. So I'm just like, wow, they really must.
He looks like the soldier from. Save a Private Ryan is just missing.
And they didn't drop out. They didn't drop out any of the sound either, because there was like, I was folding laundry while watching this in order not to die of boredom. Spoiler: That's what I thought of it. Yeah. Once I realized that Toby Stevens and Toby Jones aren't the same person.
No.
Yeah, no. Like, there's 2 feet of height difference, mm-hmm. for starters. But that was, like, the primary amusement that I had. And then I reverted to doing chores. But it was so squelchy. Like, yeah. I'd be in the next room filing some socks. It was like, like, oh, wow. Guys. But we're not allowed to see any boob.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that was my favorite part of the episode, that fight. I thought that was pretty cool. And the lead up to it I thought was interesting, where it's sort of like he's Captain Flint is Toby Stevens, who is, by the way, Dame Maggie Smith's son. And once you know that, you can kind of see it around the eyes especially. But anyway, yeah. It's fun to pretend it's her doing a drag king version of the Dowager Countess. But anyway, there's going to be a vote on whether to depose him as the captain of his pirate crew. And he has this lead on a ship that's going to be coming through with millions of dollars of whatever on it, MacGuffins. And someone has stolen the page
that gives
it away where it's going to be or whatever. And then he has to like counter this guy that's going to try and depose him. And in addition to that, continue the fiction that he totally has all the information that he needs about this thing that this guy supposedly squishes his head to death.
Yes.
Supposedly stole, but totally didn't. So that was the most interesting part of it to me, of like, how is that going to pay off, him keeping this lie afloat?
Ah.
Ooh.
I did enjoy they managed to actually have a pirate show with a treasure map in it without actually having a treasure map.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, a fun play on things. I'm not going to say it was smart, but, you know, it's nice that they actually managed still to have a hunt for treasure.
Yes.
Going as the main drive. You know, I kind of didn't mind this show. I know you guys are down on it, but I kind of liked it.
You did.
I'll
keep watching it.
It does have, like, kind of the stink of HBO envy on it. You know, you can tell it's the Starz version of a show that HBO probably could have done, obviously, a lot more with.
But it doesn't look that cheap.
No, it doesn't look cheap, but... and, you know, HBO has some clunkers too, but this, like...
Well, and it does look cheap sometimes.
It does look cheap sometimes, but I'll tell you this.
Yeah, no,
the thing I appreciate about this is that it's nice to see something that's super sunny.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's actually... Yeah. The scenes that are taking in place in the Caribbean blue, they don't look perfect, you know, and the CG of the ships is a little, like, a tad too... It needs to be a little bit more dynamic, like the sails don't bellow enough and stuff, and you can kind of tell it's CG, but it just looks so nice.
Yeah.
And I Go ahead.
Can I ask you about one character on the show who this was sort of the fulcrum moment for me when it kind of toppled, which is the character of the daughter, Guthrie. I don't remember what her first name was. She's just like the one
blonde
who runs the island.
Yeah,
blonde.
Yeah.
The blonde. Yeah, the one where she just shows up, and it seems like at that point to me the show was just like, oh, screw it. She's just going to look like a supermodel in a bustier. Like,
well,
this makes no sense that this woman would look like this in this time period, in this location even, that she wouldn't even have like one driplet of sweat on her face.
Yeah.
And then she ends up making out with the French prostitute later on.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's the HBO
envy. And there are no women over the age of 23 on this island. Like, it's like Logan's Swim. Yes. out there. I mean, thank you.
But the other thing about that,
few
that
moments,
sex scene. Sorry, Sarah, just one thing. Is that the gratuitousness of that sex scene is that we're also supposed to think this is the first time she's ever been with a woman, too. Like, all right, it's enough. Like, you can have a lesbian scene. You can't have a lesbian virgin scene. That's really pushing your luck.
Lesbian
Sarah,
virgin pirate scene.
Right. Sorry, Sarah. Continue.
Bingo.
No, please. That was a much more important point than mine, which was that there were a couple of moments where there was this, like, weird, anachronistic Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock humor happening that I was like, okay, if it were all this... Like, the bald lieutenant guy was always had these, like, this bitch type of lines I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And I like him.
Yeah.
But then on the same, by the same token, that anachronisticness could annoy me. Like, that speech towards the end that the captain is making, like, this is a pirate ship, not a management seminar.
Right.
And if someone advises you that your crew needs to feel more heard, like, that was basically that whole B plot. And I was like... Not get out your cutlass or your cuirass or whatever sword ends in ass and get to chopping. Like, there's not going to be like, okay, everyone hold hands around the circle and let's try to work as a team.
Right.
I kind of agree with Dave in that I was sort of really open-hearted about this show. I kind of wanted to like it more than I did, and if I could potentially watch a couple more episodes. But I do feel like Stars, God bless them, and who knows if their business model is doing well for them. But at this point, I feel like they have this sort of stink of the designer imposter perfume about them. Yes. Where it's like, if you like The Sopranos and Mad Men, you'll love Magic City. It's Mad right. Vanos in Miami. Or like Spartacus, which was, you know, yeah. I think actually a pretty big hit for Stars, was like, if you like Rome, yeah. you'll like Romicus.
Yes.
And this has that feel of like, if you like Game of Thrones and Pirates of the Caribbean, it's Game of Ships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, true. It's hairy people fighting with swords. But compared to Game of Thrones, it's like this universe felt a lot less interesting to me because it was so much more familiar. It was pirates. I was almost like, I wish there was like wildebeests or some possibility for something different to happen other than just like
Nessie.
Guys with beards and yeah. strangely white teeth.
Yeah.
Really white teeth.
Yeah, anything
Escape to Veneer Island.
Where people are, nice, where people are like just grimy, like so grimy. And then the minute a woman shows up, it's like a Dove ad. Like, in general, that kind of costume design means it's not going to be for Buncey. So,
and the casting of the guy who played John Silver, the sort of, I guess, nominal hero of the show, with the who looks like Lou Diamond Phillips a little bit.
Yep,
right.
The guy who has the map that everyone wants.
Right. Cubic zirconia. His name was Phillips.
Well, he, on the one hand, yes. I thought, oh, so is he going to turn out to be Long John Silver, and this is going to be the story of him opening a chain of successful fish and chips restaurants?
Oh, my God.
But also, I was like, it's a little shameless. Like, that guy looks so much like Jon Snow from Game of Thrones, and his name is totally. John Silver. So it sort of exacerbated that whole, like, this is the kind of not quite a satisfying version of another thing you like that isn't on right now. So watch this.
Yeah, if you can find it, is the other problem. Because Nat Geo does this, too. That they're like, if you don't feel like waiting for the Hurt Locker lady to come out with her Osama bin Laden movie, watch this one, which has the girl from 90210.
Yeah.
It's like when you go on Netflix
yeah.
and there's a movie called Atlantic Rim.
Yeah.
Which I saw the other day. I did not see the movie. I saw the choice of the option of watching the movie.
Yeah, there's God also a Jack, an off-brand Jack the Giant Killer on Netflix right now, too. So, yeah.
Well, I'll give it a couple more episodes to see if it, you know, gets into ship shape or whatever.
Yeah.
But it intrigued me enough, despite its, as Adam said, you know, imposter kind of feel, that we'll give it another one or two, I think. Yes.
Who was your favorite character, Dave?
I kind of like the as Sarah was saying, the first mate guy,
yeah. Bosun.
Yeah, he's good, and I kind of like the captain too.
I like him. Yeah. I like him fine.
Yeah,
the captain is good. I'm always a sucker too for, this is a totally corny character, and this will come up a little again in the canon. But remember, there was that woman who's sort of Captain Vane's right hand assassin who wields two swords and made
Bonnie.
Short work of all those people. Yes. I for 2 seconds, I thought it was Shannon Doherty, which would have been awesome.
Wow. Really?
That'd be a different show.
How
small was your YouTube screen that you were watching it?
I was watching this on my thumbnail.
Going from one topic to another, an appropriate segue makes it smooth as butter.
Moving on.
Adam, since you are here, we thought we would ask you to read a little something. And I will admit that I asked for a certain part of the book, Shovel Ready, that you could read an excerpt from. And you agreed.
Yes, I'm happy to do it. And did you see that my name, my criminal legal landscaping tool nickname also involved the word shovel?
We did.
Viral marketing right there. I'm going to read the section that Dave requested, and I will end.
Give it just like a bird's eye view of what the book's about for people.
Of course. Okay, so this is a novel that I've written called Shovel Ready. It takes place in near future dystopian New York that's been sort of crippled by a dirty bomb in Times Square.
Just like Almost Human. Not really.
Is that? I haven't watched Almost Human. It takes place in Dave's exhortations.
The city. They never say what it is. It's Vancouver.
Usually is.
And one element of the story is that there is this sort of virtual reality that people of means can kind of disappear into, which is a sort of extrapolated version of something like Second Life or, you know, a kind of immersive online game. But in this case, is literally immersive in that you sort of, you know, are plugged into a machine and then experience it as if you were experiencing real life. Yep. So this, I'll just read a very short bit, but it's from the chapter that explains a little bit about the backstory of that. And I will end it on what I believe is Dave's favorite line from the book. The way it happened was, it started as business software. Some kind of fancy teleconferencing gimmick, clunky helmets, silly goggles, but once you plug in, it was pretty amazing. 3D around a table, avatars that look surprisingly like you, pick a tie, any color, your choice. Dreams really do come true. That was maybe 10 years back. And if we've learned anything in this once proud world, it's that once someone figures out how to do something as miraculous as that, it's only a matter of time before someone else soups it up so you can use it to suck a horse's cock. In pretend land. Or run a brothel, or be a Holy Roman Emperor in pretend land. Soon people were running around half centaur or space alien furry or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or what have you. Fucking Chewbacca. Literally fucking Chewbacca.
Yay!
So the tie-in to TV is that there's going to be a Star Wars show soon?
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I came across that little bon mot in the book, I assumed that it was written for me.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I actually literally did think about you when I wrote that little joke into the book. That is no word a lie.
All right. Programming note for everybody that is on the podcast. We're going to skip that segment that was going to be next, and we're going to go straight into the canon. And Adam, as our guest, is bringing us an episode of a TV show for consideration into the extra hot, great canon. And what do you got for us, Adam?
All right. Well, I will admit I have a bit of a preamble here because the last time I was on the podcast in the previous times, I brought an episode of a show which was not voted into the canon, which
Correction.
Was an episode of Police Squad.
That was the first time you were on the podcast. You were on the podcast another time and you did successfully present an episode of The Office, the UK version.
Oh, that, sweet.
That did get in.
So you're batting 500.
Excellent.
Yep, you're hitting. Ted Williams good. Only batted 406.
Well, you can see that. How traumatic the first experience was because it lingered for me. And I thought long and hard about what I wanted to bring and whether I should try to bring a slam dunk one like The Office, which is a bit of a gimme. But I decided to bring this one, which has many, many flaws. And so the episode in question is called Objects in Space from the TV show Firefly. Oh, trust me. I'm going to make the case against it, and then I'm going to make the case for it. It's going to be spectacular. So this Objects in Space is the 14th episode of Firefly, and I noticed you already have an episode of Firefly in the canon,
yes.
Which is our Miss Reynolds, which is the other episode I thought of actually proposing. So obviously, once I saw that was in, I went with this one. To my mind, they're basically equal. And I know that already I'm starting at a disadvantage because you say, well, here's a show that only has 14 episodes. How could two of those episodes be canon worthy? But I also feel like this episode of Firefly and Firefly in general is a really interesting show, especially in the context of genre shows and genre on TV and Black Sails and Almost Human and sort of all the things that Firefly does right, I think are evident in this episode and all the things a lot of those other shows get wrong. So a brief sort of plot summary of this episode. Here's the other thing that's going against it. The main character in this episode is the character of River Tam, who is by far the worst character on the show and
Thank
the one
God
that I like the
it.
Least.
She's the worst character on a bunch of shows. I'd put her up against anyone. Anyway, continue.
It's also complicated by the fact that the actress's name is Summer, so I'm definitely going to call River Summer at some point in this. So Firefly, for those of you six people out there who don't know the show, is sort of this mashup space western that is about this group of outlaws on the ship called the Serenity. And they're flying through space. And this one plot has to do with the fact they picked up these castaways, which is this doctor named Simon and his sister named River Summer, who has been the subject of some sort of government interventionary torture, and she's been enhanced in some way, but also turned into a real annoying weirdo. And so her annoying weirdo-ness is really what you get most of in the first 14 episodes of the show. And if you see the movie that they made, Firefly, her sort of awesome warrior-ness is much more on evidence there.
I'm going to save but some comments and emails. The movie is Serenity.
Oh, God. River, Summer, Serenity, Firefly. That's right. The show is Firefly. The movie, Serenity. The
in your defense, Serenity. You are a new father and you're sleep-deprived. And as said before the podcast, the first thing you lose is the ability to recall names and titles.
Recall names.
So you are forgiven.
So the episode starts out, and basically it is River running around the ship, encountering the different crew members, and exhibiting this sort of psychic ability to understand their feelings towards her, most of which are hostile because they feel like she's endangering them in various different ways. And it's a really kind of interesting sequence because she'll interrupt someone's conversation and then they'll do this kind of cross cut where the person is staring straight, not directly into the camera, but there's sort of the implication is that she's reading their mind and they'll say some sort of thing about her. And number one, that was reminded me in rewatching it how Firefly is one of those shows that would sort of take these risks like that. Like I was trying to imagine something similar in a show like Black Sails and how you would never be able to pull that off. And there's this one sequence where she is alone in the ship's hangar and she picks up this branch and she's sort of looking at it and then they cut to a different angle and she's holding a pistol and everyone's kind of freaking out because she's got this pistol and it sort of communicates the way in which she is very odd and she's also endangering everyone. And I thought it was actually a really well-executed sequence and one that you don't see that often on television and certainly not on genre shows. The other thing that's really fun about Firefly and about Joss Whedon, the creator of Firefly, his writing in general, is he's able to pull off this amazing trick where he simultaneously gives you all the pleasures of the genre show, but then understands that you, as a fan, know all the tropes and all the conventions, and he'll kind of make jokes and make references to that too. So there was a bunch of exchanges in the show that I could have chosen as examples of the sort of fun, Buffy-esque banter that he's very well known for. But this first clip I especially like because it's not only a little bit of fun badinage between these two characters, but it's actually a kind of very sly little winky joke to the audience as well. So let's listen to that.
She's deeply intuitive. It's true that, yes, sometimes...
I don't think she's intuitive, Doctor. I think she's a reader.
Psychic?
Is that even remotely possible?
You tell me. You've been studying what they've done to her?
They've definitely altered the way she reacts to things, even the way she perceives, but I'm not...
Psychic, though? That sounds like something out of science fiction.
You live in a spaceship, dear.
So...
I like how it acknowledges that in a way, say, zombie TV shows never acknowledge that, you know, they are called zombies and we're living in a world of zombies.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those moments where he kind of like brilliantly lets you have your cake and eat it too, your genre cake, because it does make sense that a character would say that in the middle of that scene, no matter if he's a guy on a spaceship, floating around outer space. They also know what science fiction is. But, you know, you could never imagine a show like Black Sails where someone would make a joke about a pirate movie. Of course, they're pirates in the 18th century, so they don't have pirate movies. But you take my point.
What?
Have you seen the Nickelodeon about the pirates at sea? Yar.
It would be awesome if someone started singing that Captain Jack Sparrow song on that show. And so about halfway through the episode, the antagonist of the story shows up, and he is this bounty hunter named Jubal Early. And he's kind of delightfully played by Richard Brooks, who is, I'm tempted to say best known, but I feel like you have to, I mean, he's pretty much entirely known as the assistant DA from the initial seasons of Law and Order, when he played this sort of very taciturn, logical, bloodless sort of guy who was the sidekick to Michael Moriarty and then later Sam Waterston. And to see him in this part is, I think, such a kind of bold piece of stunt casting. And he does such a great job as this character. It really enhances the pleasure of the episode for me. I personally am a big fan of the kind of genre convention of the philosophy-spouting unstoppable superkiller, which is a character that shows up a lot. I think of like Shagur in No Country for Old Men. you know, this is a really kind of pleasurable character to introduce into a scenario, and he comes aboard the ship, he disables the captain Mal right away, so you get a sense that this guy's like a serious badass. But he's also written in this entirely surprising and unfamiliar way, starting with the casting of Richard Brooks, starting with who he is. He's kind of this like slim African-American guy, and his line deliveries are so offbeat and interesting. I find him to be an incredibly memorable and really disarming character. And there's an exchange, which is our second clip, between him and Simon, which I think is really good.
You're out of your mind.
That's between me and my mind.
That's the kind of, as Dave will attest, I am a connoisseur of little action movie zingers. And rewatching that episode, I was impressed by that one. And again, I feel like it's that example of Whedon both acknowledging that you know that in this kind of scenario, in a show like this, the guy's going to say like little zingery things. But then they just have enough of a twist that it feels unfamiliar and sort of pleasurable anew. So he spends the episode kind of hunting around for River Summer and trying to capture her. There's a bit of a twist where she seems to have taken over the ship. It becomes a very sort of strange, almost like a ghost story by the end of it. And another impressive thing about this episode to me is that it's a familiar scenario, but at no time when you're watching it for the first time could you ever predict how it's all going to play out. And so there's continually little surprises. And meanwhile, he's having these exchanges with the different people, most of them with the doctor. And Whedon also takes the time to sort of write in these little pleasurable asides that, again, like a show like Black Sails, you feel like every single beat is there for a reason. Every single line is sort of setting up something for the plot, you know. And this show kind of takes its time and has all these little hidden nuggets of pleasure. So let's listen to the third clip.
You know, with the exception of one deadly and unpredictable midget, this girl is the smallest cargo I've ever had to transport, yet by far the most troublesome. Does that seem right to you?
What do you do?
Who?
The midget.
Arson. Little man loved fire.
I like that too.
And that's also a great example. One of the things that I love about Firefly is it's only 14 episodes, and it aired however many years ago, 8 or 9 years ago. And yet there's still this sort of cult of the show, people who would love to see it come back. And I think that's because it so effectively creates the sense of this larger world. And part of that is it's just a really well-realized world. But also it's like Whedon's not afraid to put these things in that sort of reference things. And you imagine that there is this whole other story about this midget out there, and maybe that'll be an episode somewhere down the line.
Also heard in that clip is that guy gets his own theme throughout it. And they use it every second he's on the screen.
Yeah, they do.
The other, I couldn't do this as a clip because it's a visual gag, but my other favorite moment in this episode is there's a great sort of shameless gag where Jane, who's kind of the enforcer on the ship and the one guy you think would be the one who could take on this bounty hunter and win, hears a noise. He's lying in bed. He hears a noise. He grabs his blanket on the wall, yanks it down. There's this wall full of all different guns, which is, of course, a moment from like every cool action movie when they show you all the guns. And then he takes the blanket and rolls himself up and goes back to sleep, which again is like one of those little Whedon. It's like a little Whedon joke, right? Yeah. Where he's like, I know what you're expecting. I'm going to give you what you expect, but then I'm going to put a little twist on it. So by the end of the story, it resolves itself perfectly. Jubal Early is sent spinning off into space. He has this great sort of Beckett-esque last line where he just is literally spinning in space and he just goes, well, here I am. And we never know if we'll ever see Jubal Early again. I was really disappointed that they didn't bring that character somehow into the movie Firefly, Serenity, because I thought he was such a cool character, although I feel like there's traces of that character in the villain in the movie played by Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Nice pronunciation. Well,
thank
done.
You. I was practicing. I'm like George W. Bush at the second debate. So... So all in all,
true.
Firefly is one of those shows, you know, it's on Netflix now. It's sort of endlessly rewatchable. There are only 14 episodes plus a movie, so there's a finite amount of it. But when I sit down on a Saturday afternoon and I'm like, I just want all my pleasure centers to be tickled right now, I always put on Firefly because it's got all the sort of usual pleasures of genre, you know, cool villains, you know, battles and guns and zingers and all that kind of stuff. But everything is done at such a heightened level, and it's so smart. And also beyond that, it's self-aware about its genre-ness, which is so pleasurable to me. And especially in this week, comparing it to a show like Black Sails or a lot of the like genre shows, I imagine Almost Human probably does not ascend to this level. It No. really makes me miss that show and what it was able to do. And it makes me wonder why there's not more TV shows. I mean, I guess really the short answer is that there's not a lot of Joss Whedons out there, but why there aren't more shows that can sort of pull this off. So I humbly submit for your consideration episode 14 of Firefly, Objects in Space.
Me first. Dave is pointing at me. There were, I think you struck on the parts that I liked. I also liked that throwaway weird non sequitur about the midget for no reason who was an arsonist. And I still love the couple that are played by Gina Torres and Alan Tudyk. I don't remember their character names. They were not in the
Zoe
episode
and
much.
Wash.
Thank you. But you're right. Picking an episode that's that river heavy is risky. Even though she's not really on screen that much, what happens is she determines that he's in pursuit of her, and then she sort of evaporates, and then she says, "I'm the ship. I'm in the ship." And then we, you know, eventually see that she's actually crawled into his ship, and that's why she can see everything somehow. She can see everything everywhere. That was never really explained, but fine.
That was episode 15.
She's manic psychic dream girl, that's how.
I was going to say she's depressive pixie dream girl, but either way. Yeah, she's tough to take. And as much as I also thought Early was a pretty good character, the episode felt, and I know this is dumb to say about one that a show that takes place on a spaceship, but it felt very claustrophobic. And not having seen enough of the series, I think I didn't have that much of an appreciation of like each person's individual part in the story because they sort of cycled in and out one at a time. Also, man, the effects look so bad. Don't show people sliding through space from one ship to another if it's going to look like that. I mean, I know we're living in a post-gravity universe and this is from 2002, but still, that was rough. So I did not respond to this episode the way that you did, Adam, but I understand why you picked it. And I admire your boldness. Dave?
I agree with the things you say about Firefly as a whole, Adam, that it is, you know, it's sort of like this delicious sort of action-y morsel that you can turn on, and it has all the elements of what you enjoy from, say, an 80s action film, but it feels updated and fresh, and it sort of can twist what you think is going to happen in sort of a delightful sort of way. I think this episode hinges on whether or not you buy the bounty hunter character or not. And you seem really taken with him more than I was. And I think my problem with this character is that he's all over the place with tone. And he is sort of the, you know, street wisdom spouting super action guy. But he's also kind of a little rapey.
Yeah, that's one of the first things we hear him say.
Yeah.
Is he
he's very dark at times.
Yeah. You're just a body to me, something like that.
Yeah. But then also he's sort of like comedically detached from his tasks sometimes, you know, like he kind of goes off on tangents and stuff. And it just seems like they wanted to do too much with that character to the detriment of like, what is the threat? Like, I didn't buy him as an actual real threat to the crew because he just seemed to be all over the place. Like, I didn't know whether he was supposed to be charming or deadly, like, or, you know, a force to be feared with. I get he's supposed to be all those things, but he didn't excel at any one of them. So for me, that is why this episode feels flatter than, say, the one we did last time, which is Our Mrs. Reynolds, which I thought the character of Saffron was like, they knew what that character was. She played it really well. And it felt right. This one feels a little off to me because of the bounty hunter character. Beyond that, you know, the zingers are great as pieces of dialogue. I just want to say again, because every time Firefly comes up, I just want to say that Firefly has, without a doubt, the world's worst theme song ever. It's cringeworthy like nothing else. the lyrics, the fact that Joss Whedon wrote the lyrics, the fact that sung, yeah. It's just terrible. It's just like, oh no, it's like my, you know, ninth grade, you know, pitcher from high school. It's just... It's just terrible, terrible. Sarah?
Well, I wanted to respond to it the way that Adam did. Firefly is my least favorite Whedon thing. It might be my least favorite thing on TV. There's something about it that just is like nails on a chalkboard, starting with the fact that the patented Whedon zingers tend to feel like his most self-regarding, like that he's standing back from them and waiting for people to laugh. River Summer Season Fest, whatever her name is, and her crocheted vest and failure to comb her hair. This character, generally speaking, in the culture, is Bunting Kryptonite. She's particularly aggravating here, and she's most of the episode. And as much as I love Richard Brooks, nostalgically, the fact is, he's not more famous despite being cool looking and having a beautiful baritone, because he's just not very good. And you could really see that. I felt in this episode that Dave is totally right about the tone changes of the character, which I wouldn't have put my finger on before, but I think it's dead on. And that's not his fault. But I think that you cast him for a certain look and a certain, like, visual sense that he brings to it. And for that, he was good, but he just doesn't have that much range, and he couldn't really control the sort of tonal vacillations of the character. What I did think was sort of interesting, but this was like a total side, whatever, Wikipedia note, is that the real Jubal Early, who was a Confederate general, also was sort of a driving force behind this theory called the Lost Cause Theory, where Southerners were like, well, we lost the War of Northern Aggression because we were completely overwhelmed, like, numerically. We never had any hope. And it allowed us to, you know, become one with the chivalrous roots of our nature or something like that. So in the context of this show overall, as this, like, band of rebels against an overwhelming force, that note is sort of interesting. But it's like, well, now I'd just rather read Shelby Foote about the Civil War then watch River wandering around with greasy hair. She's a problem, and I don't think I can get past her. I did like their little interplay when Jubal Early thought someone called him a lion. I guess Simon called him a lioness or something.
He says a lions.
Yes, are you a lions? Yeah. And he's like, I guess I could be a lioness. And Simon's like, that's totally not what I said, but cool story, bro. Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is Whedon thinking he's operating at the top of his powers, but actually kind of verging into that nobody will say no to him area. That is not my thing.
All right, shall we put it to a vote?
Wait.
Adam's got one
last
Hail
Mary. I'm like Mitt Romney on election night. I'm doing the math. It's not looking good right now.
You know who else does a lot of math is River. They mentioned that a couple dozen times.
All right. Tara.
Adam, I'm so happy you're back, but yeah, I have to vote nay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think we put Firefly's strongest foot forward on the last one. I've seen all of them, and I that's my favorite episode. This one did not work for me. Sarah?
I tried. If I could vote yes on a Game of Thrones episode, I thought maybe it was possible. Twernt. It's a no for me, I'm afraid.
So. All right, that's three no's, zero yeses. I'm sorry, but... Firefly, objects in space. I'm sorry, you are not inducted into the Extra Hot Great
right, it's time to catch up with TV stuff in Around the Dial.
Dannon's Super Bowl ad for its Oikos brand will reunite all of three of the guys from Full House, not just John Stamos, who has been their spokesperson all along. And the fact that there's a teaser for a Super Bowl ad maybe suggests that we're spending too much money on ads during the Super Bowl.
Taking a page from the Bartlett administration, the Obama White House is copying Big Block of Cheese Day this Wednesday, as we record it as Monday, and having an open house.
HBO, speaking of the Super Bowl, is moving Girls and Looking off of Super Bowl Sunday. Really? Do they think there's that much crossover between those two shows and the Super Bowl that they have to pull them? I guess.
Yeah, that's like a fingernail of Venn right there, but all right.
I don't get it.
SVU showrunner Warren Light,
I think.
Let's call the whole thing Summer River. Joked recently that Chris Christie headlines are ripping from the show, not the other way around.
Oh, sick burn.
Interesting take. Yeah.
Chris Messina, seen in the Mindy Project Christmas episode, doing a pretty great dance to an Aaliyah song, revealed this week that as a kid, he competed for the title of Mr. Dance. More dancing on the Mindy Project, please.
Sharon Stone will play the U.S. vice president in upcoming project Agent X. Who's the president? Margot Kidder?
NBC's Murder, She Wrote reboot starring Octavia Spencer is not happening. Wah, wah. But,
but
maybe revisit in the future.
So Whole Foods has a TV show called Dark Rye, which sounds like a parody of every Brooklyn joke anyone has ever made in the last 5 years, but apparently is like sincere and involves wood carving.
Wait a minute. No. Wait. It's Whole Foods has a show, meaning what? Like they produced it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on Pivot.
Oh, of course.
You know how the millennials like obscure channels and burly beards and watching TV. I mean, isn't millennials' whole thing they don't even watch TV anymore?
Yes.
So can they just watch a YouTube wood carving video? Yes. About artisanal something?
But they have to eat, and that's where they get them.
Bill Cosby may return to NBC for a sitcom if this idea doesn't end up being like Murder, She Wrote and get abandoned in the 11th hour.
Is it called Get Off My Lawn, You Kids?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah,
Starz has just greenlit a, quote, dark, gritty, unquote, ballet drama from one of the Breaking Bad writer-producers. Oh, my God. I can't wait. Also, they totally already cast someone who was in Black Swan.
Woo!
I want to watch it right now. Get in my eyeballs.
There is a real Downton Abbey board game, and I want it.
Yeah.
I think it looks, judging by the...
what a good game this is. Yes, not forgotten. How long does it go on for? Oh, ages. Oh, goody, goody.
I just saw a picture of the actual board, and it looks like Clue, and I hope that's what it is.
Oh, people got murdered at Downton Abbey?
That would be great.
Awesome.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and a Loser of the Week, and Sarah, you have our winner.
I do. It is artist Jeffrey Thompson, who got a grant or a commission of some sort to watch all 456 episodes of Law & Order and capture every single image of computers and their interfaces in the set design. He finally completed this task. I think it took him 2.5 to 3 years.
Wow.
And if you live in the New York area, he is uncovering his findings in an illustrated lecture on February 1st at the Museum of the Moving Image.
Oh my God.
I hope they air this as like a TED Talk or someone films it because, oh my God, that's amazing.
That's cool.
Awesome.
Some of those like i186 computers that they have are great.
And loser?
This is a little bit old, but it sort of only came to light between... since our last podcast record. Jennifer Lawrence was on the red carpet at the SAG Awards. She is the loser of the week. She happened to be there at the same time as Damian Lewis, and whoever was interviewing her, because she was sort of geeking out about how excited she was to see him, and said she's binge-watched the first two seasons of Homeland twice and was so excited. And the interviewer goes, I don't know if we should spoiler this, it's so old now. But anyway.
Oh, you're good.
Okay.
No. Homeland spoilers? Yeah, you're good.
So the interviewer goes, are you upset that he died? And she was like, what? And she like The tease for all of this, for this video, which I watched, was like that she freaked out and was like, seemed really upset and called the interviewer a monster. I was like, yeah, but she was probably joking. Then I watched it. She really, really seemed really, really upset. So Jennifer Lawrence, I know you're busy, but you can't expect to not be spoiled for the end of Homeland, which was over a month ago. Retract your statement of monster to this poor interviewer. That's on you.
Agreed. Guys, do you know what time it is?
Yes.
What?
Is it game time?
Correct. Get ready for Dave to apologize for last week's game time. All right. Whoa. We're just one game time. All right, everybody. This is the third game time of the season.
Is it not the fourth game time of the season?
Isn't it?
Last, the third? I think last week was.
Oh, you had two, and then Sarah has one.
Has one.
This is the fourth game time.
Oh, do I get to keep that one?
Of the season. Oh, yeah. So last week we had numerous errors in the game time. And look, people, I'm just as good as what I get. I didn't fact check that one.
Because you're a trusting soul. Well, and you think that people.
I don't want to assign malicious intent to the person that submitted it. I think what happened was that person was sort of reading things chronologically in IMDb and didn't account for when they exit a show and come back for the, you know, the end of it.
Many inconsistencies were pointed out.
Yes.
One of them I thought of as I was listening back to the episode, but did not raise. Uh-huh. Anyway. Continue.
Yeah, so there's like at least five
the
or six.
The largest being that Sarah actually won, which alarmed all of us.
That's a legitimate win.
Yeah, the mistakes were spread enough that everybody got a taste of
the
wrongness. So we'll let that win stand, Sarah. Do not worry about it. I think you won that either way.
Yeah.
Nobody look into that too close. So that's last week. So this week, I did the game time, and I did something I don't usually do, which is I gave everybody a heads up of what it might be, at least. And I said, it has something to do with 80s shows.
Yep.
So this week we are playing totally rad TV themes of the 80s. And it's very simple. I'm going to play a snippet from a TV show from the 1980s, and you tell me what it is. Please answer after the snippet is finished so everybody at home can hear and figure out what it is, too.
I'm totally
for the sticklers out there, I'm letting you know that some of these started in 79 and some of these ran into the 90s, but the bulk of the run was in the 80s. They are considered 80s shows for the most part. All right.
What is our order?
Let's see what our person in control, choosing initiative computer, or Picky 3000 to see who will start.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, valued guest. That is Adam. So Woo-hoo! Adam will go first. Then we'll go to Sarah, also in New York, and then to Tara.
Want to point out before we start, crippling sleep deprivation, which is a bummer for me because normally I would actually have a kind of quasi fighting chance in 80s theme shows.
There's Adam.
I want to point out
setting low expectations.
Sarah, what were you saying?
Also, I have a question.
Yes.
I assume that the theme is being played for one person and not.
That is
like,
correct.
It's not a show. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. It's unfair to everybody in New York. We do have like a microsecond lag between us. So we, until we're all in the same room together, there will be no shouty games on Extra Hot. Great. So each is for just that person. And we're starting with Adam.
Adam is doing lunges right now. I just want to alert everyone.
He's in it to win. See, he's setting low expectations, but he wants to win. And here's your first. Adam.
Oh, gosh. No lyrics to help me with that. You know, my initial gut instinct was to say Manimal, but then there was a sitcom-ish kind of uptick at the end.
Now, this is the 80s. A lot of your action stuff also kind of has that feel to it.
I know.
A lot of the comedy stuff is really kind of breezy and light, so it's sort of hard to, like, apply today's theme choices to the 80s stuff. You could get in trouble.
If I had to, I'm just going to go with my gut and say Manimal.
Incorrect. The answer, MacGyver. MacGyver.
Wow. Oh, see, unfortunately, the MacGyver theme song has been permanently replaced in my mind by the SNL version of MacGyver. MacGyver. MacGruber.
All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Sweet, sweet horns.
What do you think that one is, Sarah?
I can sing the rest of it, too. Because
it's also a song. Shit. It was not just a theme song.
My God, I'm going to be so embarrassed when I don't know what this is.
Tara seems to know.
Designing Women.
Designing Women is correct.
Georgia on my mind. Guessed.
So there's no points for people to answer after the initial.
There's no stealing points.
No stealing.
No, there's no stealing points.
All right, Tara, here's your first.
Yep. Enos. I have no idea.
That was Riptide.
Oh.
Riptide.
Oh.
Enos. Wow.
I thought.
That's awesome, Tara.
I thought you were going to think that was Simon
and
Simon.
Can you give her a ding point for that? That was great.
I know what Simon and Simon sounds like. It was one of the greatest television events of all time.
Yeah. Adam, here you go. All right, Adam, lay it on us.
I'm going to seem like a real chump for making the same guess every time, but that has to be Manimal.
Correct.
Woo!
And the first point is on the board.
Nice.
All right, Sarah, here you go.
There's no place like home.
227.
Oh.
Jackie.
Right.
Tara.
Yep.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
We're the Misfits. Our songs are bitter. We are the Misfits. The Misfits. And we're gonna get her.
Gem and the Holograms.
Correct. Tara's first point. And back to Sarah. I mean, back to Adam.
Gosh, that so sounds like a show that I would have watched in the 80s.
This is my favorite.
Driving. This is your favorite one?
This is my favorite discovery of this.
Of this gosh. Game oh.
It sounded like Kenny Loggins.
It does have that quality to it, yeah.
I feel like I can almost. This show was like the bastard love child of Chips and Knight Rider. Chips Rider.
All right, this show is Hardcastle and McCormick.
Oh.
Which, do you know what Hardcastle McCormick's about? I always heard the title, but I never actually knew what it was about. Okay, so there's a judge who's retiring.
Yeah.
His last case is McCormick, who's a race car driver.
Uh-huh.
And he lets him off whatever he got in exchange that he'll help him catch the cases that got away from him on technicalities.
Nice.
And that's the premise of the series.
Who else would you hire to do that except a race car driver?
Duh.
Yeah.
All right.
I know that Joe Penny was not in that show, but that seems like a show that Joe Penny should have been in.
No, he was in Jake and the Fat Man.
And he was in Riptide.
And Riptide.
Yeah. Riptide.
Yeah. All right, Sarah, here you go. And then they say the title of the show.
Huh.
Hmm. Okay. Flow.
And his best friend, Bear. BJ and the Bear.
Oh.
Okay.
All right. That is...
Yes, that was your favorite show with a monkey?
That did not sound like a theme song that I would associate with BJ and the Bear. I would have associated the Hardcastle and McCormick theme song more with that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very sitcom-y sounding. I guess Bee Gees and the Bear had a lighter touch than I remember.
It's the trucker monkey drama
was
everybody was clamoring
bear.
For.
He was balancing on a little ball.
Yes. Here you go, Tara.
Yep. I know we've had this in a previous
yes,
game time.
Yes, many of these have been done in previous game times.
But people's memories are short.
Yeah. The Colbys.
Incorrect. Adam, do you know what this one is?
I definitely watched this show, and it's a science fiction show.
Yes, and it is an anthology show by Steven Spielberg called Amazing Stories.
Oh, my gosh. I would have gotten that one.
Do you remember the Mark Hamill one where he was like this collector of comics and toys and some dudes
that
you keep
him
to make
you
rich
that.
And then he, you know, he keeps him forever and ever and he's living at a car at the end and then as it twilight of his life somebody discovers his hoard and becomes rich and, and I was like, that's not a happy ending.
All right. It's sort of the story of Mark Hamill actually.
Bum-mazing stories.
All right, so this one's for Adam, right? Adam.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Do,
will not do, be an do, easier one in the game than this.
Believe it or not, this is the theme to the greatest American hero.
Correct, greatest American hero. I heard. All right, point for Adam.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, feeling that your chances are good on this one.
God.
No?
I have no idea. Airwolf?
I know it.
William Shatner in T.J.
T.J.
All right.
Really?
So back to me. Tara.
Yep. TV themes of all time, I would say. Saint Elsewhere.
Saint Elsewhere, correct. All right, Adam, here's yours.
There's a time for love and a time for living.
I am tempted to go with my go-to sitcom answer, which is Too Close for Comfort. But wait, it could also be that weird sitcom with Kirk Cameron in it. But I'm going to go Too Close for Comfort.
Who's the boss?
Who is the boss is the correct answer.
The boss. I also would have guessed Kirk Cameron.
Sarah.
Yep.
Why is Sarah getting all the ones that sound exactly like that?
Because she loves Dixieland.
The Texaco Horn Hour. I don't.
That's Mama's Family. Yeah. Mama's Family. All right. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Everybody look around. Hear the sound. Something special's gonna come your way. We got something that is new, that is true. We got something just for you today. All around the nation, living in sensation. Have you heard? Have you heard? Have you heard?
And then the show title:
Kids Incorporated.
K
I D S.
Correct. I didn't think you were going to get that one.
It took until then for me to get it.
All right, number 17.
Spread Eagle.
For Adam.
Through the mirror of my mind, time after time, I see reflections of you and me. Reflections of the way life used to be.
That, unlike all the other ones, does not sound familiar to me.
It's not a boy show.
Not a boy show, says Tara.
30-something?
I can see where you would get that. It's China Beach.
It is China Beach.
Oh, China Beach.
China Beach.
All right. Sarah.
Yep.
Thank you for being brave.
I do need your pity, actually. That would be the Golden Girls.
Correct.
Another all-time great theme song.
Mm-hmm. All right. This will take us into our score break. So, Tara, please answer this one.
Oh, side by side. It's so cruel to Sarah.
It really is.
And?
That is Knight Rider.
Correct. Sure. All right. Score break, please.
That might be the all-time greatest theme song.
It's pretty great. Okay. Sarah has one. Adam has two. I have four.
All right.
Very low scoring game.
Yeah.
Nice segue, Dave.
Nice DJ.
All right.
Give yourself
Thank you.
A Dave point.
All right. This is for Adam, then.
That is another one that starts off sounding like an action show and then veers quickly into weirdo
family
sitcom.
Fun
family fun.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's maybe that Kirk Cameron show with Alan Thicke called Family Lap.
I thought you had the answer because you're going Doogie Howser MD.
Oh,
the Doog.
Okay, Sarah.
Yep.
Like this is another one that's also been in a previous game time.
Perhaps. I remember for sure. This one's tough. Well, I don't think you're going to get this one.
No.
Nice.
Well, I'm just...
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's going to be a military show or military adjacent. It's not the A-Team. So let's go with Major Dad.
That would have been my guess too.
Adam, do you know what this one is?
Is it that show with Eileen Brennan that was a spinoff of that Goldie Hawn movie, Private Benjamin?
No, it is Tales of the Gold Monkey.
Even the theme song is like a blatant ripoff of something else.
Yeah,
that is literally the A-Team theme song with different, like the notes just basically slightly rearranged.
Totally.
Tara.
Yeah. Confident bongos in the middle. Yep. That's the people's court, right?
That is the people's
confident
court.
Confident bongos.
That's the title
Verdict
of the episode.
Is correct.
Mr. Sternberg.
Oh. Newhart.
So close.
Murder, She Wrote. Murder, She Wrote.
I would have guessed Mr. Belvedere. Wow.
All right, Sarah.
This is why the reboot isn't happening.
You're going to get this one. I believe it. Sarah?
Let me put on my trench coat and say, it's Unsolved Mysteries.
That is correct. And as Dave
stacky.
Adjusts his sound clips as we move to the second page of themes. All right, so this is for Tara.
Me.
Here we go. Then the name of it happens.
3-2-1 contact.
Wow.
Contact.
Contact is the secret. Is the moment.
That's definitely a secret. Is that one of the ones that started?
That's a great theme. I never heard that before. Yeah. Well, how did you know that? Because I figured that was like something the educational show you wouldn't be exposed to in Canada.
Well, first of all, I have watched 3-2-1 contact.
Okay.
I didn't know they know things.
Okay. Excuse me, Missy.
Well,
all right, Adam.
It's a
here
very
you go.
Accusatory question. I don't understand what you're saying.
Oh, I just I was.
How did you
complimenting
know
that?
You? So suspicious.
All right.
Tricky.
Mr. Sternberg.
Tara said tricky, and that is the All in the Family theme song, but it's an instrumental version. Now you are in my head, Tara.
Sorry.
Because All in the Family, obviously they sing it together at the piano. So is this some stupid spinoff of All in the Family with maybe Rob Reiner or Meathead? Was there a show called Meathead? Should I just say All in the Family and be done with it? No. All in the Family.
You're on the right track. You just
I shouldn't have said anything.
You is didn't it? Remember Archie Bunker's place.
Yeah. Archie Bunker's place. I didn't.
Sarah.
And neither will history. Yes.
So stately.
Wow. Remington Steele.
Yes.
Falcon Crest. All right, so it's
that
back to...
That would have been my 17th choice.
Back to Tara.
Yep.
Got the whole theme.
Jeez. Scarecrow and Mrs. King?
The Joy of Painting.
Oh, God.
Nice.
It sounds like the Hotel Channel.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
The opening of it, I am sure, is the exact same music they used in the Cypress Creek. Listen to it.
Yeah.
All right, Adam.
This sounds like another Joe Penny show. I'm going to go with the Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Matt Houston.
Houston.
Who played Matt Houston?
Some guy.
Matt Houston,
Riverside.
As himself.
Houston.
Guy with a mustache.
Yes. Sarah?
Yep. Airwolf again.
Yay!
Hey.
Tara.
Yep. Dynasty?
Correct. Nice. Sternberg.
Maybe the best theme song of all time.
It's pretty good.
Unless you sat through it at 48 piano recitals like I did.
Do, do, do. Cha-cha-cha. That is the Hill Street Blues theme song, written by the Mozart of TV theme songs, Mike Post, who also wrote The Greatest American Hero.
Correct. Yep. On all
and Law and Order.
Yep.
He's wiping
Sarah.
With some money right now. Yes.
That's all you need.
Love that. And it's true. Family Ties.
Correct.
We had an entry in our book that we wrote, Television Without Pity, that was sha-la-la-la.
Yeah.
That's why.
By the way, if you hear some weird noises in the podcast recording,
we have a very
Gordon
whiny dog right
is
now.
In the room whining for attention. So this is to Tara.
Yep.
Oh.
Is it Amen?
Amen.
Amen.
Correct. I was hoping I would get that one. I loved that theme song. It's hated the show.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the 80s, everybody.
Oh my god, no kidding.
So sexy.
And it goes on like that for another minute.
This is for me, right?
Yeah.
It's funny with these theme songs how quickly you can figure out, like, this is a show I definitely would not have watched in the 80s. And it's probably about a young person living alone in the city, maybe. Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman.
Is it Saxophone Nights?
It is Saxophone Nights, otherwise known as Knot's Landing.
Oh, sure.
Oh, nah.
All right, Sarah?
Yep.
Whatever that is, it needs to calm down.
Yeah. Just because I like to reassure myself that this show actually existed and not because I think it's the answer. The Powers of Matthew Starr.
What?
Exactly.
That was Remington Steele.
Oh,
of course it was. It was so British.
Henry Mancini.
Oh, yeah, sure.
This will take us into our score break. Okay. And it is for Tara. Yep. I will give you additional piece of information that this is from the first season of this show.
Okay.
Got an answer for us, Tara?
No.
That was TV's bloopers and practical jokes.
Of course it was.
In the second season on, it had like a Dixieland feel to it. Yeah.
I knew that melody, but I couldn't place it.
Score, please.
Adam has 3, Sarah has 4, I have 8.
Well, okay, all right. Still plenty of game, guys. I think you could catch up. This is for Adam.
I'm gonna fumble this one. I know it.
No, you can't.
If you do, no. You have to leave.
Is it Magnum P.I.?
Yes.
Okay. I've literally never seen an episode of Magnum P.I. in my life.
What? I think you get.
Never. It's a blind spot.
Adam, you're up in the middle of the night now. You should be watching it on Netflix. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Watch the one called Paper War. That's a good one. All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Someone by night.
Moonlighting.
Yeah.
Very well done.
It's a great one.
All right, Tara.
Who was singing that anyway? Is that Bobby Sherman? Or not Bobby Sherman?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Sorry. Moving on.
Kate and Allie.
Nice. All right.
Oh, I loved that show.
I forgot that theme was so intense.
Yeah. They were going through some stuff, Sarah.
Has a very terms of endearment kind of quality to it.
Yep.
This is for Adam.
Abrupt change of mood.
We never gonna find the place where we belong. Don't have to stand alone. We'll never let you fall. Don't need permission to decide what you believe.
And then some words are spoken that give away the answer.
Jeez.
I believe that is an example of what's known in the music industry as a saxgasm. I have no idea what the show is, though. It sounds like something saucy and young and fresh for the city. I think it might be Saucy City.
Sarah?
It's 21 Saucy Street.
Oh, of course.
Known as 21 Jump Street, sung by one Holly Robinson.
Love Pete.
Oh, done.
All right. That. Sarah, here's yours.
Yep.
Really was the decade of the sax, wasn't it?
Yes.
Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, yes, of course.
All right, Tara.
Yep. Is this Major Dad? Shit.
That was Coach.
Oh, Coach.
All right, this one is for Adam.
God damn it. This game time brought to you by the Baton Twirlers of America.
I'm going to go Private Benjamin.
Ah! That was Major Dad.
Damn it.
All right, Sarah.
Private Benjamin?
Is it what?
Private Benjamin?
That is Scarecrow and Mrs.
God
King.
Damn it!
God damn it!
You're psyching. Everybody's psyching themselves out on this game. All right, oh Tara. God.
Yes.
Streets on the China, never met it before. Who cares when you drop kick your jacket? When you came through the door,
no one glared. I could continue singing
Please
that whole
do.
Theme song. But sometimes you get turned around and no one... I forget the lyrics.
Oh,
I thought I knew them, but I don't.
Interesting.
It's Mr. Belvedere.
All right, that's one point for Tara. And so this is Adam.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
Do you need more? I can give you more.
Haas and Pepper Incorporated, Laverne and Shirley. Samazzo. Haas and Pepper Incorporated.
That's a good theme song, too. All
is right. Was that show in the 80s? It did yep. not start in the 70s?
It might start in 79 days. If it did.
Yeah.
And then
good
it
show.
Just dragged
Good show.
On.
Oh, come on. It was a good show.
No, it wasn't.
Laverne and Shirley.
So Sarah, here is yours.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of saxgasms.
This theme goes on for like 2 weeks. I don't know why. I guess they did have a big cast at the end there. Yeah. L.A. Law.
Correct.
Another Mike Post theme, but yep. this is his late decadent period.
Mm. The Baroque.
Tara.
Yes.
Well, I'm not the kind to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Farrah. I've never been with anything less than a man. So fine.
First of all, gross. Second of all, the Fall Guy.
Correct. Adam.
God, that is so in my wheelhouse.
I was going to say, that's a show you would have watched,
lots
I bet.
Of clues there.
I don't know what it is, but it sounds boyish.
If you think it through, you'd have the answer, I think.
No, thinking it through is overrated.
Well, then blurt something out.
Blue Thunder.
Ah!
Oh!
Is that really it?
Yep.
Nice.
Helicopters. Done. We already said Airwolf. What else could it be?
That came from
it
your
had
lizard
a helicopter
brain.
We said Riptide and Airwolf, so that's all the helicopter shows, pretty much.
Nice.
All right, so we're on to Sarah.
Hoping to find we're two of a kind. Making
make it a go, make it a pro.
Together,
we're gonna find our way.
Together,
checking the time each
silver
day.
Spoons.
Sarah?
Silver. Spoons. Spoons of silverness.
Nice.
All right. This is for Tara.
Yes. Dave mouthed to me, "You'll never get this," and I hate to prove him right, but I have no idea.
Adam, any idea? You're a boy. You love Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's not Tales of the Gold Monkey.
I would have said Tales of the Gold Monkey.
The other one.
The other Raiders ripoff? Yes. Definitely watched it.
Bring him back alive with Bruce Boxleitner.
Ah, Boxleitner.
Scarecrow.
Boxleitner.
Scarecrow.
All right, so we're on to Sarah.
Nope.
We're on to Adam. Oh, yeah, you just said. Okay, Adam, sorry. Going to pause this and say this is one of the best theme songs. It's a lot of this and then it pays off.
Wait a second.
Get ready. Because here it comes. Any moment now. Go. It's building up.
Oh my God.
Put the kids to bed.
Woo! I'm so glad I got that one. That is one of the best theme songs. That shows the equalizer.
Adam.
The Equalizer.
Nice.
Great theme song, great show.
All right. So this next one will bring us into our penultimate score break. This is
for Sarah.
This is for Sarah. Are you ready?
Yep.
Do you know what that one is?
As mentioned in this podcast.
Any idea?
Not that I can get within the time limit.
And Adam, what is that one, please?
Police Squad.
Police Squad. Yeah. Correct. All right, score break, please.
Shouldn't it be after me? We started with Adam, so shouldn't it be a score break after me?
Did we miss one?
Did we? We didn't. Maybe you did.
Well, that's what I'm... Oh, we did miss one. Yes.
No, it's Tara's turn, and then we do a score break.
Yeah.
Right, we get it.
I did miss one on the last page. These have spanned over multiple pages in my sound thing. So here's Stars.
Yep. That was the longest overture ever, yep. But I don't know what that is.
Michael Landon in Highway to Heaven. It's the remaking out here.
Okay.
Remaking here. All right. So,
Adam and Sarah are tied with 7 each. I have 11.
All right. Here we go. So this is Adam's.
This is the home stretch, right?
This is the home stretch. This is the tough one.
It sounds familiar to me, but I'm going to have to go with one of my go-to answers, which is Too Close for Comfort.
That was Elf.
Oh.
Elf.
We guessed duets. Interesting.
You believe it?
You'd think Elf would have a wackier theme song.
You think? Absolutely. All right. I'm just doing a little impromptu, changey, dewy things. Okay, Sarah.
Yep.
And so forth.
Small wonder.
Small wonder I could not include because they say small wonder every second. There's lots of them that are 80s you think should be in here, but they're impossible to clip something that doesn't give away the answer. That was Head of the Class.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course it was.
This is...
For me.
For you. Tara.
Is it V? No.
You're on the right genre.
Okay.
Buck Rogers.
Oh,
Buck
sure.
Rogers.
That was awesome.
Yeah. All right. This is your last question, Adam.
Very impressive.
I'm so happy I got that one as my last one. Thank you, Dave. I feel a sudden urge to play some Hi-A-Lye and watch Miami Vice.
And put on your polka dot bikini.
Sure.
Already on, baby.
Oh, my. Sarah.
Yes.
Can't decide if this would be in the sweet spot for Buncey or not.
Ooh. Sarah, any idea?
Crime Story?
Matlock! No, it's Matlock.
Yeah, no.
Okay, and so finally for Tara.
I wish I could finish strong, but I don't know.
My name is Max.
Oh.
I work for the Hearts.
Heart to Heart.
Heart to Heart. All right. So we can find out the score. I think Tara won this one.
Sarah had 7. Adam had 8. I had 11.
Okay. That's a pretty close game. We have a couple bonus clips here for you. Let's just do a little shouty stuff for no points. We have 2 extras.
Simon.
Sarah got that one. And here is our final shout it out. Here we go.
French A-Team.
French A-Team with lyrics is correct. Oh, France, you weirdo. All right, congratulations, Tara. And do you want to hear our tiebreaker? I mean, find out about our tiebreaker?
Sure.
Okay, playing by Price is Right rules, the tiebreaker is this. What percentage of today's themes were written by Mike Post?
Oh.
5%,
says Tara.
5%? 22%.
22%. And
I'm going to have to go. I was going to say 10%.
No, Adam wins 13.3%.
I'm not good at percents.
13.3% written by Mike Post.
Wow.
Tara! Tara.
Congratulations, Tara.
Order has been restored. Congratulations, Tara.
All right, everybody. Well, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Grade. Mm. We discussed how Rake left us leaving. Disappointed before setting course for the Michael Bay pirate drama Black Sails. Adam dug up an excerpt from his new novel Shovel Ready. Firefly's object in space was denied canon status. We went around the dial, crowned winner and loser of the week, And Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
I'm uncomfortable.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Objection.
And Adam Sternberg.
Denied.
We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.